I am so glad to be here with you today on this, my third time at Holy Comforter, but never before in the pulpit. So I have a question to ask. Can you hear me? All right, if you can't, wave boldly. Do you remember the terrible case of two bullies a couple weeks ago in Florida? Two middle school girls used social media to torment a third girl named Rebecca Sedgwick so severely that Rebecca killed herself. What made this terrible case even worse were the totally different reactions of the two bullies. One, with her parents, was so remorseful that she immediately went over to Rebecca's home to apologize, even before she was arrested. The other girl couldn't care less, and she tweeted as much, complete with implied expletives, and just as horrifyingly, her parents didn't care either. Tellingly, law enforcement officers threw the book at the one who showed no remorse. The other they still hold responsible, but they were a little more lenient, as if to say, there is some hope for her, and let us hope there is. The story Jesus tells is not of two bullies, but of two men who may illustrate the phenomenon that we also see in those girls and in many other situations in our world today. The Pharisee is so full of himself that he leaves no room for God, or really for anyone else. But way back in the shadows of the temple, there is the tax collector confessing his fault. And you know which one Jesus holds out hope for. Now, why is that? With the guy who doesn't need a thing, thank you very much, it's clear he really doesn't care that much about God. It is all about him. Notice the number of times he says, I. He's not a bully, but he could be one. Now, yes, psychiatrists might diagnose a massive inferiority complex that the bravado masks, but still, it leaves him as the center of his universe, more than happy to throw his weight around. That's what bullies do. And don't we see that in our own world? Haven't we seen a similar phenomenon in our politics, where some people have it all figured out, for whom there can be no compromise, precisely because they, and perhaps they alone, possess the unadulterated truth? But we all haven't we seen it in our church? As we go back in history, it was 495 years ago this Thursday that the Reformation began, when one person opposed another, one group opposed another, each of whom knew exactly what God was all about and what God wanted of his people. And they knew it so thoroughly that there could be no compromise. And while we have benefited from some of the teachings that they conveyed, getting from here, there, to here was not an awful lot of fun, especially for those who were burned at the stake or who died in the wars that came about as a result. And in fact, when you think about it, We have attitudes today. Some years ago, a series of Episcopal ads ran, one of which said, "The problem with religions that have all the answers is they don't allow any questions." Well, for that, we Episcopalians could pat ourselves on the back, because we do encourage questions, but we have our pride as well. I remember hearing of an Episcopal priest on a plane sitting next to a Baptist preacher who just pestered him throughout the flight with negative comments about our liturgy. Finally, the priest turned to him and said, "Well, you worship God in your way, and we'll worship Him in His." More seriously though, I was in this diocese during some of the unpleasantness regarding dissident congregations for whom it seemed to me the only compromise was to capitulate to them. I recall Bishop Lee quoting Oliver Cromwell, not a person often cited by Anglican bishops. "I beseech you," said Cromwell, "I beseech you, in the bowels of Christ, think it possible that you could be mistaken." To raise that very notion, that you might just be wrong, that you might not have all of the answers, opens a door just wide enough that God can walk through. For let's be clear, what we're talking about here, whether it be bullying or this phenomenon of having all the answers or being so full of oneself, is at heart a spiritual problem. Pride is definitely a spiritual issue. And it's a problem that is most spiritually acute when you or I or anyone is full, so full of him or herself that it leaves no room for God. But if that's the problem, that then the problem suggests a way forward. There's a translation of the Bible that puts the first line of the Beatitudes this way: "How blessed are they who know their need of God." To realize that one is not God, and in fact one needs God, opens a person to receive what God can give. It is a humility which is the beginning of blessings that God can then bestow. To make the same point differently, I have a friend who's a brilliant, now retired professor of law, who never outgrew his West Virginia twang. He has a saying, "God's God and we ain't." Now, you'd think that this is so basic that anyone with half a brain would realize that, especially those of us who go to church. But remember, the one who forgot that lesson was the one who thought himself so spiritually righteous, the one who spent so much time in the house of God. So Jesus issues a warning to everyone, but it is especially a warning to those of us who take faith seriously, precisely because we run the risk of being so serious about our religion that we don't leave room for God or anyone else. Suddenly, we become the ones with all the answers. And those with all the answers can too easily turn into spiritual bullies. And in fact, there's a huge danger. To look at others and think that they are spiritual bullies may in fact put us into the same boat. It's a danger for many Episcopalians, I fear. That is, we listen to those of other churches who are so sure of themselves when it comes to the Bible or on social issues that when many of us take different points of view, so different that we don't even try to find common ground. But when we become so sure of ourselves about what we don't believe, and convinced, therefore, of the rightness of our own positions, whatever they may be, then suddenly we are just as full of ourselves as the self-righteous guy in the temple. And the people we think are the spiritual bullies on the other side. In other words, spiritual pride can afflict the best of us, especially the best of us. So what to do? Start with something very simple. Relax. Let God be God. Stop trying to take over. It really does help to remember, not just on Ash Wednesday, that you and I are dust, and to dust we shall return. And while we're at it, remember that not only in Lent, that we're not perfect, that we don't have all the answers. Moreover, we're not expected to have all the answers. And more than that, we don't need all the answers. And then we can truly do what God directs. Because God's God, and we ain't. One of my endless projects, as you might read in the bulletin, is a study of the faith of that good Episcopalian Robert E. Lee, who gave his name to the church where I was rector. In spring of 1865, all was lost for the Southern cause. Lee knew it. He didn't try to prolong it, even though he had devoted himself totally to an effort he had thought was right. Returning back to Richmond, he encountered a friend he had known as a comrade in arms in the Mexican War, named Marcina Patrick. This person was now the Yankee general responsible for the well-being of Richmond and the distribution of supplies to the population, including the Lee family. Well, they encountered each other. They got together for a good long chat. And during their talk, Lee supposedly said, "Patrick, the only question on which we ever differed has been settled, and the Lord has decided against me." With that, Lee, who had fought so hard for Confederacy, went to Lexington to rebuild Washington College and to do his part in rebuilding the South, and to bring what reconciliation he could with the Union, that we might indeed be one nation under God. How blessed are they who know their need of God. The kingdom of heaven is theirs.